You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Most ready I've ever been to do All Marine Radio in the three and three quarter years that I've done this. Seriously. I'm like totally ready to do this show today. Let me tell you how ready I am to do this show. Okay. First of all, I went to bed at 8:30 last night. I didn't mean to go to bed that early, but I did. And so I meant to just, like, lay down for a while because I was tired. And I wound up falling asleep, waking up, falling asleep, waking up, falling asleep, waking up. And I'm like, I'm out. But I didn't get up early, oddly enough. I stayed in bed till 5-something, then I got up, which is pretty normal. And came in and started doing my thing, right? Started making the posts for the website. Got the audio files already. Got the Facebook and the Twitter post ready. That's like totally ready for the show. Then, as I woke up a few times, I just perused the news before I go back to sleep. Found a couple articles that I thought were interesting that you would enjoy. And, yeah. So, boom. Exactly. All Marine Radio on Wednesday. So last night, Colleen comes in and she says, "Hey, a bunch of my friends are going," and she starts naming them off. "They're going to a concert on Thursday night, and Catherine's going, and I was wondering if I could go." I said, "Did you say on Thursday night?" She said, "Yeah." I said, "No." And so it occurred to me that, you know, this morning I should ask her about her grades. Oh, yeah. Not so much on the grades. Now, Colleen and I go through this on a regular basis. Yeah, she's like, "Oh, it's really hard." And then what happens? She gets booted in the ass. And then what happens? A miracle happens. Somehow or other, the fucking grade goes up. It's a miracle. Like, God intervenes in the form of hard work. Oh, shit. Who knew that was going to happen? Right? It happens. It started when she was like in fourth grade and was struggling with math, with like multiplication tables and division and blah, blah. I said, "Oh, I can help with that." "Yeah, you're going to do that shit. We'll download software and then," but you know, we raced. We could do the most in a minute and like within like 2 days. She started out, she could do, I can't remember, it was like maybe, I don't know, 30 seconds that the tests were. She could do 9 when she first started, right? 36 hours later, she was up to 18, and the only thing that was limiting her was how fast she can punch in the answers. After, see it, punch, see it, punch, see it, punch. That was the defining limitation. Oh, my God, so, yeah, a little parenting going on here in the McNamara family. Little, which oddly enough is going to be part of the program today. Yeah. So let me just tell you one of the conclusions of All Marine Radio here. as I go around the country, and I do this every day now. This is what I do. I do post-traumatic winning every day. I do my show every day. And oh, Colleen's still here. Isn't that nice? I thought she left off. Give me a kiss goodbye. Yeah. Little Miss Bad Attitude now. She might pay for that. The, the more I go around the country and, you know, I'm constantly, you know, talking about, people ask me about suicide because, you know, and what, how does post-traumatic winning address that and blah, blah, blah. Well, let me tell you. And so then, so that subject comes up, you know, and this problem's getting worse in the country. Problems getting worse in the DOD. Why? Is the mental health epidemic that rampant in our culture? Well, I would tell you what Viktor Frankl would say. He'd say no. What people go to see mental health professionals for today, we would have referred them to priests years ago. They're pastors, let me put it that way. If you're Catholic, you would obviously see a priest, but not everybody's Catholic. This I know. So anyhow, bipolar, schizophrenic, manic depressant. No. Bye, Colleen. Have a good day. Love you. Oh, see, she says love you me all the time. Didn't say it today. She'll pay for that shit. So the answer to that is no. Well, what's the problem? Well, I'll tell you what the problem is. We have raised young people to expect life to be different than the way it is. We have created for them an artificial world that they live in from the time they're born until they get excreted into society. And then when they get excreted into society, right, they can't deal with it. They can't deal with it in larger numbers and historically have not been able to deal with it. And it's because, they're not prepared. I said the other day, look, you got screwed by your culture. You got screwed by your parenting. You got screwed by your school district. Because everybody wants to tell you that which you want to hear. And then you roll into the real world and it doesn't go like that and you don't understand, like, what do I do? Why do you think so many 20-somethings are living with their parents? Who the hell wants to live with their parents? Are you kidding me? Why are they living with their parents? Yeah. You know, and I love this whole, you've seen this like, okay, boomer, right? So that's an insult to, right, to, if you're a baby boomer. That you don't get shit like global warming and things like that, right? You don't get it, right? Okay, boomer. So that's like the back of their hand to you. So, you know, and normally uttered by somebody, right, who's living, you know, with their parents who can't pay their student loans and is bitching about that too. Right, so how about this, right? Get off on your own before you, like, insult somebody else. Pay your bills. Be a responsible citizen before you get off on somebody else. And insult them because you can't empirically prove your case. About the Electoral College, which you don't even understand. Right. And the best I've seen, and this is, I don't know, this is a kid who's a YouTube guy, right? He's a popular guy on YouTube. And he said millennials shouldn't learn about World War II because it's too traumatic. Right. And then you hear Lincoln booming in your head. Those who don't study the past are doomed to repeat it. Right. It's World War II is too traumatic from a book. Oh, well, what would it have been like if you'd have been around for it there, pumpkin? So, and my point is this. I mean, think about that. Think about what you create. Timeout in Timeout Corner. If I'd have had Timeout Corner, man, I've been in a federal penitentiary right now. Right? Corporal punishment, Kathleen, man. And let me tell you, it did not matter where you defied my mom. She would get you. So when we went to baseball game, my dad, like Major League Baseball and stuff, and even when we were in the minor leagues, you know, we dressed up. My sisters wore dresses. I wore slacks and a shirt every time. Like the attire that you would wear to a baseball game, my mother would, she would not blow her parliament smoke in your face, but she would, you know, she would say something very, you know, nice. Oh, you look lovely. And then, you know, like, look, they don't go representing their father and their family. You do. That's why you don't dress like that. Got it? Yes, Mom. Right? Now, we would be there, right? And if you acted up, if you acted bullshit in front of Kathleen, she would tell you to stop. If you didn't, she would reach over with her fingernails, right? And you knew it. Well, you knew exactly what was going to happen, right? She would grab you inside of, normally she sat to my left always, right? So it was my, she would wrap her fingers and her hand around, curling from the outside of my bicep to the inside. She would take her fingernails, right? And she would insert them into the flesh on the inside of my bicep, and she would lean over, right, with her cigarette in one hand and my bicep, right, in the other, and she would look at me and say, Michael, if I have to tell you to stop this one more time, there's going to be trouble. Do you understand? And I'd say, yes, Mom. Right? And then she would let go. Now, if you squirmed, right, when she inserted her fingernails into your flesh, you got it worse. Okay? You got it worse. And then, so then she would let go, and she would, you know, like, so she, normally she's leaning over one of my sisters to get to me. Okay? And so and then she goes back, you know, and she's watching the baseball game, smoking her cigarettes. My mom didn't even like baseball, but she went all the time. And then at some point after, like, her gaze went the other way, you kind of snuck a look at the inside of your bicep. Yep. Purple, dark pink gouges in the configuration of her fingernails. And they were real. They weren't some bullshit acrylic things, right? They were her real fingernails. That's right. And then that was out in public. Yeah, that was out in public. Timeout corner? Pfft, come on. Okay, so now we go from timeout corner. Now you go to soccer participation awards. Yeah, Joey, all you did is show up, put your shoes on the wrong feet. You put your shirt on backwards. You didn't really want to play, but you showed up. And we're going to give you a word for that shit. Yay, Joey, you little loser. Right? Now, contrast that with me. They only gave out one trophy, unless you won the league championship and then you got a little, like, everybody got a little trophy, if you won, right? Normally, if you had you were on a team, only one kid got a trophy. That was the MVP. He was the best player. And if you left that and looked at your mom and said, I wish I'd have got a trophy, you know what you would have got told? You need to work harder, right? So you were getting this growing up, like, okay, the way you get better is you work harder. Right, the way you don't get your bicep deformed is you don't act like a jackass in public. And when she said no, guess what no meant? No meant no. It didn't mean scream and yell and throw a fucking tantrum. Because if you did that, she would put an end to the tantrum. Yeah, you don't even, trust me, you don't even want to go there. Okay? So, timeout corner, right? Then participation awards. I mean, look at the world you've crafted in that kid's head, right? Now let's talk about how does that make you feel? So every time something happens, we talk about your feelings and how important your feelings are. Contrast that with my life. I'm combing my hair over at my Uncle Jim's house. We're getting ready to go someplace. He walks by me and he says, get in the car. Nobody looking at you, right? Right? Which is funny, right? It's funny. Probably true. And what do? You put your comb in your pocket, you go get the car. Right? I don't know that my feelings are the most important thing. Right? But, I mean, so now your feelings are the most important thing. Add in helicopter parents that do not allow you to go through adversity. Right? So whenever there's turbulence, your parents insert themselves. They don't look at you and say, hey, fix it. Go apologize to this person. Go apologize to that person. Right? And set that right. Or else I'll get involved. Okay. They don't do that. I mean, to the point, and you've heard me say this before, Colleen, she could fail every class in her high school, and she'll be a senior next year. So there are no consequences, right? You tell the teachers to fuck off and stuff like that, they're not going to throw you out of school. So there's no consequences that go with your behavior. And that's the world that you live in, right? And then you go to college, for those people that do, and the wrong person gets elected president, and your feelings are so crushed they stop classes and bring in counselors to counsel you. And then you walk into life, and I won't even talk about the military, but you walk into life, and then life doesn't go your way, and nobody gives a shit about your feelings, right? Nobody even cares about you. And you don't get promoted just for showing up. You don't get a raise for just showing up. Why didn't I get a raise, though? I mean, he did. Oh, well, yeah, he's good at what he does. You show up on time, you know, about half the time. You got an excuse every time you don't, right? You do mediocre work, a lot of mistakes in it, you know. So why didn't you get a raise? That's why. Life gets difficult, man. Life gets difficult. And then something bad happens to you, right? Maybe you get in a car accident. You know, pick something. Pick one of the, you know, pick a card, any card. All of a sudden, life takes a shit on you. Now what? Move back in with your mom and dad? Right? What would our parents have done? They'd have got a second job. Move back in with your parents and get your life together. Okay. All right. So, but you can see, and then how about if life gets after you a second time? Life doesn't kick you in the stomach this time. Life kicks you in the fucking face. Now what? So you can see, I mean, so again, the problem with suicide in the country is not a mental health problem, in my opinion. And I see it, and I talk to people all the time. I hear reports after suicide. Wasn't diagnosed with this, wasn't diagnosed with this, and they killed themselves. Why? Right? Because their life was hopeless, that's why. Because they couldn't cope with it, that's why. Now, so that's the bad news. The good news is this, right? And I'm going to play a little audio to illustrate the good news, okay? The good news is that it's fixable, right? It's fixable. Now, I play a little audio from a doctor by the name of Trivedi. Okay, Dr. Trivedi is an Indian psychiatrist, and he developed software called Vital Sign 6. What the software is designed to do is to screen for depression. Now remember, if by the time you're reacting to it, if you're telling them, please call the 800 number before you get ready to kill yourself, that horse has pretty much left the barn. That means you missed every symptom, every emission. And most people don't do this in private. They kind of give up signals. Okay? You missed every one of those. And you so don't know that human being that you want them to call you before they kill themselves. Now, like I said, the good news is that we can fix this. We can help this with this. So I want to play audio from Dr. Trivedi. Okay, so I hope it plays. Now, this is Dr. Trivedi. Now he so the software Vital Sign 6 study with general practitioners in Texas where he's doing research. And I want to say at Southwest Texas University. Or University of Texas Southwest, something like that. Right? And so every time you come in, you get screened for symptoms of depression. if you ping, I think, three times, then you begin to get routinely monitored for it, right? So we can catch this in the embryonic phases of it. Got it? Yeah. Right? And so I want you to listen to the numbers that he talks about. 44,000 people in the study, pay attention to what percentage ping for symptoms and what percentage ultimately go to see a mental health professional. And then we're going to talk about what happened to everybody else. So, Dr. Madagar Trivedi.
That's absolutely right. So our screening is really universal screening. If you, what traditionally happens in primary care is people wait and the patient either complains or starts crying or is suicidal is when they screen. That is not called screening because then it's too late. So what this is, we are primary care practices are universally screening. Every patient coming into the clinic gets screened for depression, and that is how you identify whether they need to have further monitoring or not. And that is the 12 to 15% of patients. Once they get screened positive, then they get routine measurement at every treatment occasion to monitor their outcomes. And if the patients have significant need for psychiatry, they are referred, and that has been really less than 1% of the population. Because there is, like...
Did you hear that? Less than 1% of the population. Now, it's 44,000 people in Texas, where we all know that mental health disorders are rampant. No, I'm just kidding about that, all right? But 44,000 people in Texas, 12 to 15% ping for symptoms of depression, 1% go and see a mental health professional. What happened to the other 11 to 14%? Well, guess who treated them? Their general practitioner. Guess what their general practitioner talked to them about? Diet, exercise, sleep, alcohol consumption, and disclosure. Talking about it. Okay, now, how many minutes do you think the general practitioner spent with those patients? Set your stopwatch, right? It wasn't going to be long. Do you think that the general practitioner spent a half hour with them? Not only no, but fuck no. How many minutes? 5, 10, 15? Gave them something to read, point them to a website? Let's just say 15 minutes. 15 minutes from a general practitioner, repeated, right, maybe a couple times, and then questions following that, took the vast majority of everybody who pinged for depression and helped them deal with it. Now, my point of it, of saying this, is, first of all, we can all be general practitioners for people that we work with, people in our family, people who we love and we care about, right? And we spend a shit ton more than 15 minutes every 6 months with them or every year with them. We can do that. So the vast majority of this stuff is fixable. That's the good news. The good news is we can help with this. Now, what do you need to know? What do you need be able to how do you action, right, helping them? If you don't know they have a problem. If you don't know they have a problem. So one of two things has to happen. If you're not in the military, right, hopefully they come and they say, I've got a problem. Now, here's what I found out about first responders. It's absolutely stunning to me. If they say they have a problem, and if we do what we tell them to do, which is go seek help, guess what will happen? They'll get their shield pulled if they're a cop, or they'll get pulled off their engine. So what happens? Nobody says shit, because I don't want to lose my job. It's how I support my family. And so what happens? Everybody fakes it. Everybody's dealing with their shit, trying to, and everybody's staying there. That's the end state of the public policies in place by most communities around this country. Yeah. So that's a problem, and they've got to change it. I would submit to you that the vet center model that run from the union is the model that they need to adopt. There's historical precedence for it, right? Vietnam veterans created that. They do not want to go into big VA, have their mental health records held by the federal government. So the vet centers were created, and your record by law stays there. It cannot move. It cannot move. So, okay. So, relative to military suicide, the Warrior Wellness Octagon is the catalyst for conversation. How are you doing in 8 different criteria? 8 different categories. Okay? And so it's designed to be like Dr. Trivedi's, right? Vital Sign 6. Every time we sit down, every month, we're going to talk about 8 issues. Okay? Okay? Alcohol consumption. How you doing, McNamara? Right? What's in your head? Are you talking about your problems? Are you going to church? Because you go to church. Right? How are you handling adversity, trauma? How's work? Do you like it still? You used to, right? Physically, how are you doing? Are you getting better or worse? Next, financially, how are you doing? How's your family? Extended family, I mean. How are your friends and how are your social media? How's that ball of wax rolling for you? And then how's your relationship with your significant other? So that is the, I would say, the military equivalent of Vital Sign 6. So they come with shittier parenting, right? They're not prepared for the real world, and we don't want to have this conversation with them. We want to, the military count tends to do performance and conduct counseling. And that's as far as it goes. And that's gotta stop. You gotta make it about them. Right? Dave Furness sent me some great stuff that Nick Saban does at Alabama. And, you know, it's awesome stuff. About, and tells a story about a linebacker. And the guy's walking, he was like a freshman starting at Alabama. I've told this story before. And he's walking home from practice in his freshman year. And these drunk idiots in a frat house start heckling him. And he goes in the frat house. And the University of Alabama police called Coach Saban. And he comes and gets this guy. And they go back to the football office and sit down in Saban's office. And he starts giving him the word from the University of Alabama football program. And the kid looks at him. Now, the kid's going to be a first-round draft choice in the NFL. And Saban knows it. And he says, Coach, where I come from, people, you know, he's from Texas. He said, where I come from, people say that stuff to you, you got to be a man. You got to stand up for yourself. And Saban said, I could see I wasn't getting anywhere. And so I looked at him and said, look, as a first-round draft choice, you're going to sign a contract somewhere between $20 and $30 million. If you would have busted that place up today, and not only the university police been involved, the Tuscaloosa police, you then go through the criminal justice system for a charge of aggravated assault, and you have that on your record, even if you come back after that and play well here, you're going to drop to the third, fourth, or fifth round. Now, third, fourth, or fifth round money is probably somewhere between $2 and $4.5 million. He said, so you're right. You have every right to go in there and bust that place up because what they said to you was wrong. Is it worth to you somewhere between $25 and $27 million. He said, and the kid looked at him and said, he says his name in the piece. I should find the piece. He looked at me and said, Coach, you'll never have another problem for me while I'm here. He said, and he didn't. He said, but what he learned was I got to make it about him. How do you make it about them if you don't know them? As Gerald Mattis says, right? If you don't love them, you need to get out. Okay? And let me play that little piece of audio. And so imagine coming from, here's the audio.
If you don't love your Marines, then you really ought to get out. The only reason I stuck around that little paying outfit 40 years is for the absolute pleasure of serving alongside cocky, rambunctious, disciplined, selfless, unbelievably selfless young Marine. And the infantry got its name, infantry, young soldier. And I enjoyed being around them. And in the military, it's all about the team. And so if you don't know the team players beyond simply their rank and last name, you don't care about them deeply. I mean, just go up to Bethesda any time you want to see the cost of war and see the ranks on the rooms that you're walking into. Lance Corporal here, Lance Corporal there, PFC here, Sergeant there, Lieutenant. If you don't care about these guys, don't expect them to care about what's important to you. They're putting their lives on the line.
All right, so that's J.N. Mattis himself. If you don't know them, right? If you don't know them, then how does this work? And so you don't know them. Now go further back, right? The majority of them will come from single parent families or broken families or divorced families, right? And there's there's another little data point from the Journal of American Medicine, and I'll read that to you here right now. I'm kind of flipping through my post-traumatic winning presentation. Yeah, you're getting a little dose of it. Listen to this from the Journal of American Medicine. Let's see. This is published in 2014. People who served in the military tend to have experienced more traumatic childhood events, such as being abused or living with an alcohol-dependent parent, than people who are not veterans, according to a new study. In particular, men who volunteered for the military were more than twice as likely as men without military experience to report at least one adverse event in childhood, which supports a theory that people may use the military to escape from dysfunctional homes, the researchers write, in the Journal of American Medicine Psychiatry. I wish I'd have known that. Hell, I'm one of them. I'm one of them. Yeah. But I wish I'd have known that. It would have probably changed the way I looked at my Marines, changed the way I tried to get to know them, changed the way, you know, I tried to help them. But now what I say is, look, so they come from that environment. And when we talk about this kind of stuff, 2-8 very early grabbed the ball on this, the Warrior Wellness Octagon, and got into it, right? So I asked, His name is Tom Siebert, the battalion commander. I said, hey, Tom, will they tell you when Marines talk? He's like, oh, my God, let me tell you what my sergeants tell me. They won't shut the fuck up. So the bottom line is they're waiting for us. So if that doesn't happen, you come from more divorce. You come from a system that does not teach you about life. Doesn't teach you, doesn't let you fail so that you can develop the single great thing that you need in life, and that is the ability to overcome adversity. You don't know how to do that. And then you get boomed into the world, and you start getting your head kicked in. And even in the military, they don't really know me. Right? I mean, they talk to me, that's where I make my money, but they don't know me. And then you feel isolated, and you're overwhelmed, and then when the right set of circumstances line up. But, you know, but I would tell you this. Make no mistake about it. The problem with suicide is not a mental health problem. Those numbers are beyond the mental health statistics of this country. The numbers come from people who just can't cope with it. And as I said, the good news is that we can do something about that. So anyway, and so that's why. Right? Let me give you parenting advice. One of the best things I ever got told about parenting was from my father-in-law, Dr. Donald James Drake. He passed away. I don't know. It's been a while now. Yeah, I can't believe how long it's been. Anyway, he's a great guy. And He said, look, the only advice I'll give you as a parent, he said, if they don't understand what no means by the time they're two, you're going to be in for a long, long life with that kid. If they do, they're easy. So no has to mean no before they turn two. So when you look at them and you say, no, don't do that, screwing with a wall socket or something like that, they should turn and they should walk away from it. Well, how does that happen? Well, they have to have a negative experience, and it ain't timeout corner. Slap their hand, and I had a friend say, well, I slapped his hand, but he just laughed. Well, you didn't slap it then. Raise your voice, put him in the room, right? All of that. And it's the structure of creating successful people. Giving, and again, I always say this, relative to things you never hear a kid say, oh, let me go get my participation award. They're in a box in a closet on the floor because that's where their moms put them. Because the kids don't care about them because they didn't earn them. They don't mean shit to them. You can't give esteem. Esteem is earned. But parents, they try to fake them out. Oh, we'll give everybody an award. I didn't earn. What? I didn't do anything. The only reason I showed up was because my mom made me. She had my soccer cleats. She had my shirt. I didn't know where any of that shirt was because I don't care if I play. And we're trying to give them esteem. Yeah, it doesn't work. And then it's like, how does that make you feel? Your feelings become the center of your life? Really? Shit, man. That must be horrific. If the way you feel is every day and how you bounce through the world is based on your feelings, good God. And then when it does get adverse, mom or dad swoops in and gets in front of your coach, takes on your teacher, and rescues you and makes it good. So even though you're failing and your behaviors are bullshit, none of that gets reconciled. You never have to get reconciled. But life's waiting for your ass out there. And they go into the world ill-prepared with none of the coping skills they need. The good news, though, is that it's fixable. It's fixable. So if you're a parent, stay away from that stuff. Teach your kids to be accountable, right? Teach your kids to be accountable and make them accountable. So anyway, there you have it. Yeah. I got one more I want to share with you. Actually, there's two articles, and maybe we'll get to some headlines today. But two articles I want. One is just very briefly, but the United States Marine Corps band makes today official. Good morning to you. It helps if I open up the right channel. Yes, I understand. All right, no need to be snarky out there. Dedicated to everybody who's a parent out there, okay? And you gotta up your game, okay? Your kids are dependent on, right? They're getting raised in schools that are not properly equipping them to deal with life's issues. So you've got to allow them and not be a helicopter pilot. You've got to not be a helicopter parent. you've got to let them fail. And then you've got to require more from them, because that's how they develop what I would say is the single most important skill they're going to ever develop, and that is the ability to overcome, right? The ability to overcome adversity. They've got to develop that. No kidding. And that's what this is about. You have young people that don't have those skills, and they get tired and they get overwhelmed, and then they say, I'm done with this. So, with that said, this is dedicated to all you parents out there. Up your game, boys and girls, right? Do a better job. Your kids depend on you. And for all of you who are leaders and own them, you've got to get to know them in a way that you haven't known them in the past. If you don't know about their lives, you got to sit down and you got to learn about that in some way, shape, or form so you can help them. And you can make progressing at your company, at your business, in your military unit about what they want out of their lives. And if they want to be a plumber, find a way to get them to go hang out with a plumber. Maybe off base in the area, maybe the guys that do plumbing on base, right? Find ways to show them that you care. Because most of these kids have not had somebody like that in their life. Everybody's been content to allow them to fail. Everybody's been content to not push them and fill their head full of bullshit. You can change that. And you can show them what it is to be a winner in life. To be a winner in life. And I promise you, man, they don't get taught that shit, right? They don't get. And let me just tell you, the school districts around the country, this is the butcher bill for the way we raise our kids today. This suicide rate is the butcher bill for that nonsense that we've seen go on in this country for so long. And that shit's got to change. Right. And let me just tell you this. The people that are killing themselves, I'm going to say it again for about the third time, they are not schizophrenic. They are not bipolar. They are not manically depressed. These numbers are beyond those numbers. These are people that don't have any of that and are overwhelmed. We got to fix it. So, it's dedicated to all you out there that are in a leadership role, that are a parent, that can help change that number. Get after it.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, were amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
If you don't love your Marines, then you really ought to get up. The only reason I stuck around that low paying outfit 40 years is for the absolute pleasure of serving alongside cocky, rambunctious, disciplined, selfless, unbelievably selfless young Marines. And the infantry got its name, infantry, young soldier. And I enjoyed being around them. And in the military, it's all about the team. And so if you don't know the team players beyond simply their rank and last name, you don't care about them deeply. I mean, just go up to Bethesda any time you want to see the cost of war and see the ranks on the rooms that you're walking into. Lance Corporal here, Lance Corporal there, PFC here, Sergeant there, Lieutenant. If you don't care about these guys, don't expect them to care about what's important to you. They're putting their lives on the line.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, you know, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran, but you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, time to check the weather. Then we'll take a break. Maybe we won't take a break. Cloudy in 52 in Quantico, sunny in 59 at Camp Lejeune. I don't know that I've seen this. There's two weather alerts for 29 Palms, but they're in red. So we'll take a look at that. There's a flood warning in effect. Showers supposedly in Southern California. So flood warning in effect in 29 Palms and a flood advisory. Advisory means it might happen. Remember, warning, there's an R in the warning, means it's real. Got it. So that's going on. Camp Pendleton has four weather alerts. Cloudy in 56 at Pendleton. Let's investigate that. It's mandatory. Triggered at 3 or red. Let's see, there's a beach hazard statement, so stay away from the beach today. There is a flash flood watch, which is below advisory in terms of severity. Watch. No, it's advisory, watch, warning. Okay. There's a marine weather statement and a small craft advisory. So, a lot of ocean stuff. None of it seems too severe on the coast. I should know because I live relatively close to that place. All right, Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy in 72. Okinawa, dark cloudy 69. Lashkar Gah in Afghanistan, in Helmand, cloudy in 58. Ramadi, clear in 58 in Iraq. So that's a look at your weather. Let me go over a couple articles that I wanted to share with you. I saw an article earlier this morning in the New York Times. No one believes anything. Voters worn out by a fog of political news. Now, this is like, you know, and I'm in this. I don't, like, it doesn't, and this is not a recent phenomenon either. I am so sick of this bullshit game that gets played in Washington, D.C., right, that our government can't function, that we can't put the results of the election behind us, we can't work to make the best country, and that for the next 3 years until we have another election, we're just going to burn it down on the other party. I'm sick of it. I don't pay attention. I don't care if Trump gets impeached. I don't care. Not going to impact my life. I hope it doesn't impact the United States military. I hope it doesn't impact our foreign policy. But you know what? I don't care. To me, there are two sides of a bullshit event, and it doesn't matter who you want to listen to. They both play fast and loose with the truth, which is code for they both lie. So I just thought it was interesting. New York Times. People tuned it out. They're numb to it. They don't care. Because we get this shit fed to us all the time. Now, I saw an article in the headline is this. Nearly all mass shooters since 1966 have had four things in common. The largest study of mass shooters ever funded by the U.S. government reveals stunning information about perpetrators. I don't know that it's stunning, okay? Now, what's interesting is they started it in 1966, and that's when a Marine went up into the bell tower at the University of Texas, and they started there because that one was the first large shooting ever covered in large volume by the American media, okay? In a new Department of Justice study of mass shootings, killings of four more people in a public place since 1966 found that the shooter typically has experienced childhood trauma, a personal crisis, or a specific grievance, and a script or examples that validate their feelings or provide a roadmap. And then there's the fourth thing, access to a firearm. The root cause of mass shootings is an intensely debated partisan debate, with one side blaming mental health and the others blaming guns. Researchers hope that the findings of the study should usher in a more holistic and evidence-based approach to the issue and provide opportunities for policy action. Data is data, said Jillian Peterson. Data isn't political. Our hope is that it pushes these conversations further. Yeah, good luck on that, Julian. Right? People that don't care about facts, which our politicians don't, till somebody rams them down their throat in public and they can't get away, then they will do something. But until then, right? The study compiled by the Violence Project, a nonpartisan think tank dedicated to reducing violence in society, was published Tuesday and is the most comprehensive and detailed database of mass shooters to date, coded to 100 different variables. Its release comes less than a week after a teenage boy killed two students at his high school in Santa Clarita, California, before fatally shooting himself in the head, which would not even make this study, because the threshold of this study is 4. Researchers use the FBI's definition of mass murder, 4 more people killed, excluding the perpetrator, and applied it to shootings in a public place. The data stretches back to August 1, 1966, when a former Marine opened fire from an observatory deck of the University of Texas, killing 15 people. It wasn't the first mass shooting in the U.S., but researchers chose that point because it was the first to be substantially covered by TV and radio. The database delivers a number of arresting findings. Mass shootings are becoming more frequent and deadly. Of the 167 incidents the researchers logged in the 53-year period, 20% have occurred in the last 5 years. So, 53 years, the last 5 years would be less than 10% of the 53, and yet you have 20% of the events occurring there. Like the way I did that math in my head right there, it's because I went to Catholic school and my mom used to yell at me when I didn't get good grades. They're also increasingly motivated by racial, religious, and misogynistic hatred, particularly the ones that occurred in the last 5 years. In an era when tightening gun laws, including background checks, is a national political issue, the study found that more than half of all mass shooters in the database obtained their guns legally. But researchers said they were particularly struck by how many mass shooters displayed symptoms of being in some sort of crisis prior to the shooting. Those are opportunities for prevention, said Peterson. Okay, there's five profiles. Ready? Right? K through 12 shooters, white males, typically students or former students of the school with a history of trauma. Most are suicidal, plan their crime extensively, and make others aware of their plans at some point before the shooting. They use multiple guns that they typically steal from a family member. College or university shooters, non-white males who are currently students of the university, are suicidal, have a history of violence and childhood trauma. They typically use legally obtained handguns and leave behind some sort of manifesto. Workplace shooters, 40-something males without a specific racial profile. Most are employees of their targeted location, often blue-collar job sites, and have some grievance against the workplace. They use legally purchased handguns and assault rifles. Place of worship shooters, white males in their 40s. Typically motivated by hate or domestic violence that spills out into the public. Their crimes typically involved very little planning. Shooters at a commercial location, such as a store or a restaurant. White men in their 30s with a violent history and a criminal record. They typically have no connection to the targeted location and use a single legally obtained firearm. About a third show evidence of a thought disorder, a term for a mental health condition, like schizophrenia, that results in disorganized thinking, paranoia, and delusion. How about that? So, thought it was interesting, right? Thought it was interesting. Thought you'd find that interesting. Okay. Now, Bob Nielsen is coming on the program here momentarily. So, top headlines in the news today. Two U.S. service members were killed in a helicopter crash in Afghanistan. That leads... Stars and Stripes, interesting story in U.S. Naval Institute News. China's Coast Guard is enforcing its Blue Water Territorial Expansion. So, China's Blue Water Territorial Expansion is its 9-dash line that is illegal according to the, right, international law of the sea court that lives in The Hague, right? But you can't enforce it because that means they'll pinch your ability to sell into their country, and nobody wants to have that happen. So everybody's playing charades. From Marine Corps Times, there's an interesting article about the 8th Air Force over the skies of Germany in World War II. Headline, 75 years after his last mission, World War II bomber pilot recounts the sheer terror of bombing runs over Nazi Germany. And it's written by J.D. Simkin, who writes a lot, and Claire Bear. And then top five stories in early bird. One, ISIS expected to revamp operations in Syria, grow ability to target the West, says a Pentagon watchdog organization. Number two, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman's military uniform becomes a flashpoint at the Trump impeachment hearing. Now, this is similar to what Oliver North did, right? You're working in this as a civilian. In the White House, you never wear your uniform. You get called in front of Congress. What do? You throw your uniform on. So it was controversial when Oliver North did it. It seemed to work out for him. So Lieutenant Colonel Vindman is obviously in good or bad company, depending on how you view Colonel North. Number three, did the Navy's top SEAL show contempt for Trump? His pay grade restored by President Donald Trump on Friday, Special Warfare Chief Operator Eddie Gallagher has filed an IG complaint against the Navy's top SEAL, accusing him of uttering contemptuous statements about the commander-in-chief. They need to get Gallagher out of the Navy. He's not afraid because the President of the United States has his back, no matter how wrong he is. So, and you're seeing it play out every day. Number four, rising costs, dwindling recruit numbers, increasing demands may bring back the military draft. This is clickbait, okay? Because everybody goes hysterical at that headline. Number five, Trump blows off Congress inquiry on Lebanon aid freeze. All right, and real quick, overseas operations. Defense Intel report says Iran will seek new fighter jets and tanks as the 2020 embargo lifts. Next, U.S. military Montenegro plot strategy against cyber attacks ahead of 2020 elections. Iran's military expeditionary capabilities are limited, but it's heeding valuable lessons learned. Next, U.S. South Korea cut short meeting over sharing defense costs. Uh-oh, that's not good. All right, let's look at your weather. Bob Nielsen going to join us next. Yeah, Bob going to join us here on a Wednesday. And then we're going to do like all Vietnam radio for the next hour. Or all Vietnam vet radio. Ken Rogers is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.